This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, we are into hour two on this Wednesday. Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie along with you in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. Another game day for the Calgary Flames. They look to sweep the season series with the Winnipeg Jets. 6 o'clock, puck drop, Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson. 5 o'clock, Flames warm up with the one and only Pat Steinberg to get you set for tonight's matchup. Lots of Flames chat in hour one, including hearing from head coach Ryan Huska on a game day. And then some more Flames talk in the Thursday DMs, all of that on the Hour One podcast. In case you missed it, check us out wherever you get your podcast: Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. Keep the text coming at 960-960, along with us here in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. Outstanding producers Azam and Cam, along with Simon, rocking things on the board for us this afternoon. Quick reminder, if you have a wet basement, the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems has a lasting solution to keep your basement dry. If you experience any water in your basement, contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit them at dlbasementsystems.com. Still to come, a look at the opposition with Ken Weeb of the Winnipeg Free Press. But first, kicking off hour two of one of our favorite chats of the week as we head down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcome in from MLB Network and the Cinephile podcast. It's our pal Adnan Virk along with us. AV, how are you, pal?
Logo, I'm great. Thank God I do not have a wet basement. That nothing worse.
Yeah, it's not one of those things you want.
Just had my sump pump taken care of, a little bit of maintenance work there, $1,000, but it's critical. I didn't know until I became a homeowner how critical the sump pump is, but it has to do with rain, which has been a lot of rain here in the Northeast the last couple of days. So thankfully, no water in my basement. We're above water and doing good.
Would you rather snow instead of rain as a good, not just us in Calgary, but some parts of Canada have still been seeing it as spring. It's supposed to have been sprung.
Yeah, it's tricky, Jim. When I hear snow in April, I'm just like, ugh. At least it was heavy rain the last couple of days, and the kids have been indoors all day, stir crazy. But I'm like, it is supposed to be April showers bring me flowers. When I get snow in April, that's not a pleasant feeling for anybody.
No, we're in our fifth edition of winter here in Calgary. It's supposed to be nice next week, but who really knows what'll happen? We're just going through the motions here. It feels weird that there's snow out. We're talking about baseball already, but there's so much to talk about. We got to start with the Jays. Sportsnet Stats is a great resource we have here at the company, Adnan. They're also a great follow on Twitter. Unless you're a Jays fan last night, because the stats coming from our crew at Sportsnet were not positive. I'm going to throw both of these at you and get your reaction following this series loss to the Astros, okay?
All right.
Sportsnet Stats had last night, Jays set a franchise record for the fewest hits and batting average in a three-game series. They were batting 106. Last time they did that, they were in 1978 taking on the Boston Red Sox. And they are also the first team in modern MLB history, which is since 1901, to be victimized by a no-hitter and a one-hitter within the first 7 games of the season, Burke.
Wow, that's awful. Great job of the Sportsnet team with those stats, because that definitely illuminates what a struggle it's been for Toronto out of the gate. Listen, the good news is they do have great pitching, which has kept them in it and which has been strong so far. But, yeah, I guess timing kind of hurts them in the fact that the Astros got swept against the Yankees. Now, when you hear swept, you think it was like a one-side demolition. But, no, those were close games against New York. The Yankees just happened to be better. But clearly the Astros were deflated. They were frustrated. Got punched in the mouth against one of their bigger rivals in the sports. They had to bounce back in a strong way. And they surely did so against the Jays. Now, I would not count on Ronel Blanco to throw a no-hitter against Toronto. If you just told me, list all the Astros pitchers before I predict Blanco, I had 6 or 7, right? What is it, Verlander, Fromber, Urquidy, Garcia, Hunter Brown, Christian Javier. Eventually, I'm like, Ronel Blanco? I'm like, yeah. So that was pretty shocking to see, and I guess you can call it an anomaly. But the one-hitter also was uninspiring by the Jays to get shut out like that. It's pretty frustrating. Now, I know early in the season, we always say, well, cold weather, cold bats, et cetera, things will pick up. But, yeah, that's, as you pointed out, Logan, that's historic ineptitude so far from this Jays offense. I hope they can turn it around quickly.
How do you feel about this Renault Blanco kid and the story? This is a guy who was a reliever. He had never pitched as much as he did before that no-hitter. I think he had worked at a car wash long before he ended up in the major leagues. But this guy seems to have a unique story.
Yeah, absolutely, J-Mac. That is what is great about the sport of baseball, is that you hear about guys from humble beginnings and they're able to come to this moment. He was not expected to be a big player on the team, you know, doesn't speak English, is making, you know, league minimum, all the rest of it. Like, he's going to be, when those guys are healthy, he might not even be in the rotation. Because think about right now, they're missing Verlander, Kiki, Garcia. With those three there, and McCullers. So you got those four guys, plus Hunter Brown and Javier. Like, there's your six. So, like, Renault Blanco probably shouldn't even be in the starting rotation to have that kind of performance. It was a game of his life. Now, I was working with Buck Showalter, four-time manager of the year, the other day. And he said, listen, I don't want to be the guy to pour cold water on this great story. I said, but? And he said, you know, to the spring, the most innings he threw was five innings. Now, he said, I hope he's fine, but we cannot, you know, we can count how many times it happens. A guy does not get stretched out, all of a sudden throws a no-hitter, and then isn't the same. Michael Lorenzen threw a no-hitter last year, wasn't the same after that. Johan Santana, very famously after his no-hitter for the Mets, wasn't the same. So I hope it's not going to afflict him, but it's a challenge. And Buck was telling me, sometimes you got to save the player from themselves. Like, he said, if he was in that position, he may have pulled him after six. He said, because he goes, once you get to the seventh or the eighth, now you're too far down the road. Now you're committed. And the worst case scenario is the guy has a no hitter through 8 2/3, and then gives it up on like his 107th pitch, and they're like, oh my god, his arm is shot, and we didn't get the no hitter. So at least in this instance, Blanco gets a memory to be proud of. But I'm very curious if he does now, G-Mac, the next couple of starts, because like Buck was saying, there's reasons why managers have to pull these guys and kind of save the player from themselves. But hopefully that's not the case, and that was one of any more memories to come.
Maybe just wasn't concerned about what he was seeing from the Jays side of things, because they haven't been figuring it out at any point here. I guess, Ed, and the biggest question that I've seen around this Jays team is, if you haven't changed the personnel up enough, which they really haven't, Justin Turner's the biggest change in the lineup that this team's had, then perhaps the approach needed to change. Like, how you go about creating offense for this team needs to change, and we're not sure early on if there's been enough of that. Is that too early to dive into that sort of concern, or is it, you know, a fair one to start to bring up at this point in the season?
No, I think you're right, Logo. I think that's definitely a part of it, because if you look at the Jays, the fact that everyone agrees they were underwhelming a season ago as the 89-win team, you go, what'd you do that was that different? And there was no seismic differences. Of course, Ohtani would have been the big one, but instead, it's these supplemental ancillary moves. So Justin Turner's a good hitter. I totally get it, but no one's expecting him to be, you know, the catalyst for this offense. He can hopefully hit 20-plus home runs and drive in 90 runs, as he did for the Red Sox. There's only so much you can expect from a guy who's, you know, 37 years of age. So on a one-year, $13 million deal, you can't look at Turner to be the savior. You have to look at Bichette and Vlad as your linchpins, that they're going to be healthy, they're going to be strong. And as I said to you guys before, the three guys that I'm really looking at are Springer and Varsho and Alejandro Kirk. All three of those guys were subpar offensively a season ago in terms of their OPS plus, and they've got to be better. Like, Kirk's supposed to be one of the top five hitting catchers in the game. You know, Varsho's supposed to be not just a great defensive player, but somebody that can actually hit a little bit beyond just some home runs. And, of course, Springer's still got 3 years left in this contract. They need more out of him. So I think it's a fair point. If you're not going to mess up the personnel and not going to shake it up, you need to look at the different approaches. And approach really does matter. You know, I look at the Yankees, who are off this blistering start. Anthony Volpe looked like a different player. You know, last year as a rookie, he was a 2020 player, won a gold glove, but realized that wasn't nearly good enough because his batting average was rather shoddy. And so he comes into spring with a much different approach, much more flat bat path. And, like, he looks a different hitter all of a sudden. Like, he had a four-hit game the other day. So, for the Jays right now, you know, you're always tinkering with your swing, with your mechanics, all that kind of stuff, and they should be doing some tinkering, because this is a pretty abysmal way to start the year.
I would love to know your thoughts on Davis Schneider. He hits a big home run for the team earlier in the week, helps them to win over the Astros. They sit him yesterday, and then it leads to an 8-0 debacle at the hands of the Astros. Shouldn't this guy be an everyday player? He showed some chops last season, and he's come up huge for them in the early parts of this year. Why aren't they playing him every day?
Yeah, it's a great point, J-Mac. I remember when he had that series, you know, his coming out party against the Red Sox. It was just unbelievable. And you could already tell, like, he's going to be a fan favorite with the goggles and the stash and all the rest of it. And, you know, maybe some thought he's not as strong defensively as some of their other options were. But I'm with you. If your offense is slumping and this guy can bring offenses, I'd find a spot to have him in there. And again, that's a good story as well. As a guy was, you know, a late round pick, was, who knows what you're going to get out of him, stuck in AAA, but the fact he's really kind of made the most of his opportunities, he's been solid. And as far as not being a mainstay, again, the only thing I've heard is maybe not as strong defensively as some other guys, but I think if your offense is lacking, you're willing to sacrifice a little bit of D for some offense. And he can be a really important piece of them, and you're right. Had that big game the other day, so hoping some more Davis Schneider in the offing.
I don't want to ask this, but I feel like we have to, just knowing the pressure on this Jays team. But does Ross Atkins have another managerial change in him before the spotlight turns to him and what he's done with the lineup overall?
I think you're right, Logo. I think absolutely. Listen, John Schneider, I'm sure, is a good man and a good baseball man, and you know, clearly has fought the good fight and is doing whatever manager has emboldened him to do so. But I think a lot of people were surprised he was coming back after what happened last year, and especially what felt like a disconnect with the GM and with the manager. Like, that Barrios decision felt like that's Ross Atkins telling him that. And Ross Atkins very publicly told the media, no, that was John making his own decision. Like, don't blame me for that one. So it kind of felt like a weird situation in which they're maybe a little bit too honest about that. But it felt like a second guess in that moment to have them once again underachieve, not even get 90 wins, to lose against the Twins, who win the Central, and felt like, you know, they were going to be the underdog in that series. I'm with you. I think that some people were definitely surprised that Schneider did not lose his job. Again, I don't advocate for it, but Ross Atkins knows that he's got one more move to push if need be. So, yeah, if things continue, again, they're 3-4 right now. Listen, there's nothing horrible. They are going to face the 7-1 Yankees in what feels like a very important series here in the Bronx. But if things get dicey, you know, as they go into late May and April, then, yeah, I think that John Schneider's job could be in jeopardy. No question about it. They got to make the playoffs, period. And if they're, you know, slumping around 500 once we're heading around Memorial Day, then that's going to be real cause for concern.
Mm-hmm. We should go around the league, Adnan. Let's start in Oakland, where the A's will be spending the next three seasons after this one playing out of Sutter Health Park in Sacramento, California. 14,000 is the capacity for that ballpark. I don't know if you also saw John Fisher's comments, the A's owner, about how he's excited to see players like Aaron Judge hit home runs out of that ballpark. Last I checked, Aaron Judge is still a member of the New York Yankees and not a member of the A's. What do you think of that whole debacle with the A's and this little stopgap before they make their way to Vegas?
Yeah, Jim, if they can't get to Vegas quick enough, right? We all know that. This is the last year of their lease in Oakland, and, you know, they're drawing flies, quite bluntly. And I totally get it, right? If I'm an Oakland A's fan, why am I even going to the games? I'm sure their TV ratings are okay. Like, you know, in a local market, maybe they're okay. But listen, it's the only good news here with Oakland has been their broadcasters. My old buddy Dallas Braden does an awesome job on the color. We worked together at ESPN. Of course, Jenny Kavanaugh is the first female lead play-by-play voice of a baseball team. And Jenny, after her first game, was really cool video they saw, taking off the headset, her score sheet, all that being sent to Cooperstown. So obviously a great moment coming off of Women's History Month. But as far as the baseball in the field, it's ugly. You know, 13 errors, their first five games is awful. Ooh. Thankfully, they were cleaning up a little bit after that. Zach Geloff, who was great for them a season ago, slow start. You know, Blackburn pitched well the other day, but there's not much. J.D. Davis has been all right, you know, coming over from the Giants, staying in the Bay Area. But this looks like they're going to be a team that's going to have well over 100 losses as they finish out what's going to be just a tough year in Oakland. And we weren't sure what was going to happen. You know, there were some people who thought they might re-sign this lease with Oakland just for a few years more. Some thought they were going to play in San Francisco when the Giants were on the road, that the A's would take over those home games. And then there was this Sacramento proposition. There was also thought maybe they'd move to Vegas early from the AAA ballpark there. So I don't know what the best option is. But this is what it is, right? It's going to be Sacramento for a few years, and kind of reminds you of Arizona, how they're ranked, right? 5,000 people.
That's exactly like what I said.
Kind of thing.
That's exactly what I said. It's Bullet Arena vibes. Yeah. Same brain.
That's what it feels like. So, it's certainly not what you want long-term, but short-term, you deal with it. And I think originally they said 10,000, but you're right. They said with the outfield seats, you can get up to 14,000. And you have to hope that for the team it'll be an advantage just because they'll be used to it, that major league teams will come in there and just find it just a little bit off-putting and maybe a little bit unnerving. The A's can steal a couple of games out of them. But, yeah, I it's not the way I would have drawn it up. Obviously, if you're going to leave Oakland, ideally you get right to Vegas, but they don't have that infrastructure just yet. It's going to take a few years. And by the way, they have the option for 2028 to still be in Sacramento. You know, the hope is the A's will be in Vegas in 2028, but that is not a foregone conclusion. So it's at least 3 years of baseball in Sacramento, and then maybe one more year before they get to Vegas. So it's, hey, good for the good people of Sacramento, right? They've got the Kings for all these years. Now they get some baseball for a few years. Enjoy it.
A more positive story in Cali is Mookie Betts and the L.A. Dodgers. As we talk on this Thursday, Virk, and you look at the offensive stats in the MLB world right now, batting average, home runs, RBI, slugging percentage, on-base percentage all belong to Mookie Betts. What a start to the year it's been for him. And got to imagine if he stays healthy, this is a guy we're talking about in the MVP race in the NL.
Yeah, I love him, Logo. He's got to be one of my favorite players in the game to watch, partly because he's my height. You know, I've interviewed Mookie at the All-Star game, and the guy's, you know, I'm 5'8", he's 5'9". This guy's awesome. I mean, how the hell can you be that good a player at that size? But he's an extraordinary athlete. Everyone knows about his bowling prowess, right? He can bowl 300. He can play basketball. He's a good golfer. He's one of those guys that can do everything. But you also can't take his work ethic for granted either. And I can think of many a player who's gone from infield to outfield, namely one of my other favorites, Fernando Tatis Jr., won a platinum glove in right field last year. But to go from the outfield to the infield, that just doesn't happen. And even if you go from right field to second base, okay. But after Gavin Lux looked shaky in a few games, the fact that Dodgers very quickly felt like a panic move, no, Mookie's going to shortstop. I'm like, wow. Like, I don't think you can appreciate just how hard that is. Now, I was working with Chris Young, longtime outfielder who played with Mookie in Boston, said Mookie used to always take grounders, even with the Red Sox. So maybe it's not as overwhelming a challenge as you might think. I guess he's always been an infielder at heart, came up that way, has always had a fondness for the position. But again, I still think playing shortstop is incredibly challenging. I mean, if you can just, if Mookie can give them league average defense shortstop, that's a massive win. Because his offense, as you noted, will speak for itself. And if it can, you know, hopefully not be a sore spot, which is what they thought it was going to be with Gavin Lux, I mean, that just again shows the importance of this guy, his versatility, his leadership, all of that. Like, it's just, I can't think enough about how hard that is, what Mookie Betts is trying to do. And so far, doing it fine. And the offense, as you said, he's been raking. I mean, if, you know, the AL Player of the Week was Juan Soto, who I spoke to the other day, and Lourdes Gurriel, former Blue Jay, NL Player of the Week. But Mookie right now is the MVP. And, you know, the Dodgers always going to be must-see TV, and watching that lot, the fact that it's Betts, Ohtani, Freeman, MVP, MVP, MVP. So far, Mookie's, you know, so far Mookie's the lead dog. Of all those MVPs, yeah, he's been the biggest MVP, and he's a blast to watch, man.
What a tough life in L.A. Of the MVPs who have won MVP, this guy's the most MVP of them all right now. That's tough living in L.A. for those Dodgers, the poor Dodgers.
Hey, oh, man. No. No, to live in L.A., awful.
What's going on in Cinephile this week, pal?
What do they do this week in Cinephile? I know next we're going to do Curb Your Enthusiasm. This week was Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which I still can't figure out the title. Is it Godzilla X Kong? Is it Godzilla times Kong? Because having seen the film, it's just more Godzilla and Kong.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, I preferred it when it was Godzilla versus Kong. Okay. I liked it when they were adversaries. Because you know me, I'm pro-gorilla. Like, I'm always going to be on the gorilla side. So I'm all about King Kong. Like, take down that lizard.
Did you say you're pro-gorilla?
Yeah. That's a very common Adnan Virk fact, okay? Yeah. You didn't know that? He's always been pro-gorilla, okay?
Pro-gorilla? Yeah. Oh, my God.
If you're ever talking to Animal Kingdom, I am pro-gorilla. If the three of us ever took a road trip to go see a zoo, I'm one of the gorillas. First thing.
You want to put yourself in harm's way that way?
No, I love, listen, gorillas are gentle giants, J-Mac. That's what people don't realize about a gorilla. You think because of King Kong, they're these, you know, scary primates, but they are just 1,000-pound gentle giants. I mean, they eat plants. They're fantastic. I love, and they're so, you know, human-like in terms of their behaviors and such. I just love gorillas. So okay, I'm pro-King Kong, and we're getting a lot more Kong in this movie. It's Godzilla X Kong. So more Godzilla than one can handle, more Kong than one can handle. The movie wasn't great, but I love gorillas.
I can't wait until we all go to the zoo together and a gorilla.
The movie wasn't great.
And a gorilla threatens.
There's more Godzilla and Kong. That's great.
I can't wait until we all go to a zoo together and a gorilla rips off Adnan's hand.
Whoa.
And it's just like, oh no, what about the gentle giants?
You can go see the Godzilla exhibit then. I'm going to go see the gorillas with Virk. okay?
Yeah. Listen, Ron McGill, who runs Zoo Miami, of course, a big feature member of the Levitard show. I had him on Cinephile once just to talk animals. I said, I just want to talk gorillas. And his words, he goes, gentle giants. He said he was once, I'm not kidding, 5 feet away from a 1,000-pound gorilla. I'm like, oh, my God. And I said, Ron,
a gorilla?
You're tapping yourself. Yeah, he said, not at all. He said, those gorillas, they, he goes, there's, he was in locking eyes of the gorilla. Like, you must have seen your life flash through your eyes. Just not at all. He goes, gentle giants, man. It was such a moment of serenity. He is also pro-gorilla.
Next pandemic, it'll be Gorilla King instead of Tiger King, and we'll have a new road to go down. You're the best, AV. Appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Logo, Jimac. Thank you, boys. Take care.
Take care. Ed Danverk, MLB Network, NHL Network, Cinephile Podcast, and pro-gorilla. For those of you that didn't know, Julian.
I would have liked to have known if he was pro gorillas, like the musical group.
But this was this.
With the Zed.
The
Zed. The Zed. Mm. We live in a country where we say Zed, not Z.
Z.
So, yeah. But
he's dual citizen, though.
Okay.
You go either way.
Yeah, fine. You do what you want. You hang around them gorillas if you want to. Go in the pit. Be in dangerous harm's way.
Let's take a break. Come back on the other side. More on the Winnipeg Jets with our pal Ken Wiebe, Winnipeg Free Press. Look at the opposition here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. All right, it's time for a look at the opposition tonight for the Calgary Flames. It's their third and final meeting with the Winnipeg Jets. Winnipeg headed to the postseason. They've made a couple of trade deadline acquisitions, including a couple of former Flames in Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli. What's left for this group ahead of another postseason run? To help us answer that question and more, very happy to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, welcoming our pal, Jets beat writer for the Winnipeg Free Press, Ken Wiebe, joins us this afternoon. Ken, thanks for the time as always, sir. How you doing?
Doing tremendous. Thanks for having me. How's everything going over there?
We're doing pretty good. It's a different grind here in Calgary than the one in Winnipeg, yeah. but still interesting nonetheless as we get set for these final games, Kenny. And obviously for us in Calgary, the intrigue in this matchup comes from a couple of former Flames now finding their way in Winnipeg. Tell us about the impacts of Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli in Winnipeg.
Yeah, Monahan, the preemptive strike made by the Jets in early February has been the perfect elixir to the number two center position, which, you know, has kind of been in flux for a lot of the years here outside of when Paul Stastny was acquired at the deadline in 2018, then brought back. And obviously Pierre-Luc Dubois held that role before he moved on to the LA Kings. But Monahan's been awesome, basically given the Jets everything they needed. I mean, they were a poor face-off team before he arrived. He's helped the penalty kill. And even though the power play has kind of been up and down, mostly down, he's given them a really nice element in that bumper position where he's provided really good scoring throughout, and he's such a great distributor. So he's been excellent, come as exactly as advertised. And obviously, interestingly enough, the Jets were also in on Elias Lindholm before he was moved to Vancouver, and it's probably ended up working out a little bit better that Monahan arrived here instead of Lindholm, with all due respect to his skill set. We know it hasn't been going well for him there. Toffoli has been interesting here. He had a great start, like 4 goals and 6 points in his first 5 games, and now he's gone 6 games without a point. He missed the last game due to illness. Given him, you know, he's obviously a threat to be on that second line, but today he's going to play on the Adam Lowry line with Cole Perfetti having such a great game in the last one. But Toffoli's sort of finding his way, I guess, would be my way of explaining it. But a guy that obviously is bringing championship pedigree, and I think he's still a really good fit. It just has been a little bit quiet offensively the last little while here for him, and I expect him to get that turned around sooner than later.
Still games to go in their regular season, but it's sure looking like they could be facing the Colorado Avalanche in that first round of the playoffs. Do you think with the way the Jets are constructed, it could match up well against a team like Colorado that's shown so much speed and so much talent and has an MVP candidate in a guy like Nathan MacKinnon?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough matchup for anyone, as we know, but I would say the Jets' depth would be something that they would hope to maybe put them over the top. And then obviously we know the one place where the Jets would have the clear advantage would be in goal with Connor Hellebuck going up against Alexander Georgiev. And again, I like Georgiev, guys. I mean, I think that he's got great potential, and we just know that his save percentage has not, and we know that's not the tell-all stat in the NHL, but this is a guy who got outplayed in the first round last year, and that's why Colorado's title defense ended early. But yeah, the Jets are going to need Connor Hellebuck to absolutely, be more than just a Vezina candidate. He's going to have to be an MVP candidate if the Jets beat them, but And they're also going to need guys like Mark Scheifele to step up and, you know, do their best. And then obviously Adam Lowry. Adam Lowry's week last week, guys, included head-to-heads with Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, and Andrei Kopitar. So throw the leading candidate for the Hart Trophy in there as well when it comes playoff time. But, yeah, I mean, that's a murderer's row of matchups. But, yeah, I mean, if Lowry's line can't minimize the damage for MacKinnon and Makar, I mean, I don't think anybody has much of a chance to beat Colorado. But I think it's going to be a really intriguing matchup. And that's where, too, guys like Toffoli and Monahan are going to have to help push the Jets over the top. And they're going to need 2018 Mark Scheifele, playoff Mark Scheifele, the 14-goal, 20-assist guy that helped them get to the conference final. And then they're going to need Kyle Connor. I mean, 30-plus goal scorer again. He's going to have to be really good against them. But I think it's an intriguing matchup, especially with what Colorado did in terms of their roster construction at the deadline, too. I mean, they made a couple moves that were definitely one eyebrow raiser, just having covered the 2022 Stanley Cup run. Mm-hmm. Bowen Byram, I would not have expected to be on his way out of town. But they addressed a big need, too, at center with Casey Mittelstadt. Sean Walker's done a nice job fitting in. And then they added to their depth, especially after losing Logan O'Connor, guys, having Duhaime and Trenin come in and just give them a little bit more grit on that fourth line. I think it'll be an intriguing matchup on a lot of fronts.
You mentioned Connor Hellebuyck as a Vezina candidate. I think he's been the front runner for a good chunk of this season. Can you describe and put into words Connor Hellebuyck's 2023-2024 and how special it's been for him and why it is pretty likely he'll end up with a Vezina?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, he's a guy that has played very well for the Jets before and has won a Vezina and been a runner-up before or a finalist on a couple of occasions here. But, I mean, the Jets improved their team defense, and that's been their biggest biggest step forward, and that's one of the reasons why they're in the Jennings lead, and that's one of the reasons they're the best one of the best 5-on-5 teams in the NHL. But Connor just has provided such stability at the position, and I mean, we talked about the parallels between these two franchises going into the year, and the biggest difference was that Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck signed extensions, and beyond Michael Backlund, the rest of the Flames have been shipped out of town, and just having that stability between the pipes has been such a valuable asset for the Jets, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention the outstanding season that Lauren Brossoit is having, guys. I mean, just been absolutely dynamite, probably one of the best backups, if not the best backup in the league this year. And in any other situation, he'd be in a tandem role were he not working with a workhorse. But Hellebuyck, always high up there in goals saved above expected. And it just his job has become a little bit more predictable this year outside of some puck management woes during that six-game losing skid. But he's been just awesome between the pipes. And, I mean, you guys know this. And Logan, we talked about it before the opener. I expected Markstrom to bounce back. And when you have stability at the goalie position, you have a chance. And, mm-hmm. I mean, the Jets have had a better chance than just, again, they were leading the division for a good chunk of the year. And now they're, basically in that tug of war for second or third here.
As far as the group in front of the goaltenders go, Josh Morrissey hit the 60-point plateau again this season. I believe he's the first defenseman in franchise history to have back-to-back 60-plus point seasons in Winnipeg history. And, 2 years ago, he took that big jump up in points, Ken. I'm just curious how much of an impact that's had on the Jets team to see him take that jump offensively and now been able to maintain it for these two seasons.
Yeah, Josh has been just such a massive piece of the puzzle here, too. He's such a, Mark Scheifele is the straw that stirs the drink up front. But, I mean, Josh has been a real play driver from the back end. And I mean, we know that Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes are the front runners for the Norris, and rightfully so. But I mean, Josh is still top five NHL defenseman for me. And I know that some people say, "Oh, well, he doesn't kill penalties; he can't be a true Norris, winner." But for me, the only reason Josh doesn't kill penalties is because they want his minutes at 5-on-5 to be used that way, because those penalty killing minutes are so taxing, and they do still play against the opposition's best on a lot of occasions. So, and the other thing too, guys. Josh has put up 60-plus points, and the power play points are way down from last year. So for me, the fact he's making such a contribution at 5-on-5 only enhances the type of season that he's had in terms of his move forward. He's always been a really effective player, but he's kind of moved himself into that upper echelon of defensemen around the NHL for me.
I have a question with the Jets, of course. It's easy to forget, but this year began with, I still think it was surprising, but the news that Connor Hellebuyck and Mark Scheifele would be signed to these extensions. And people wondered last offseason what the Jets would be doing with this roster, and instead they've doubled down on the core players that they have. If this season doesn't work out for them, are they just kind of locked into just seeing what happens with this core for here on out, or could other changes happen?
Yeah, I mean, Julian, I mean, I think that the Jets are certainly, the plan is to make Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck Jets for life. And I mean, that's sort of something both of them have talked about. Could there be other moves coming for the Jets? I mean, of course. I mean, I think Nikola Ehlers has 1 year left on his deal and Kyle Connor has two. So, I mean, if you're looking at a bigger picture core, I mean, Josh Morrissey is going nowhere. Neither of the other two guys I mentioned, they extended Nino Niederreiter. Adam Lowry is locked in for another portion here. So I don't see them making and it's all relative, right? I mean, if the Jets got bounced in the first round, is it a bad year? I mean, they're going to be on the verge of being a 48-50 win team. And if they get knocked out, they'll be knocked out by a team that won the Cup 2 years ago and has, two of the top three or four players in the NHL. So I'm not sure it would go down. I mean, it would go down as a disappointment given how great a start that they had, but I don't see the Jets blowing it up if they happen to not get out of the first round just based on their level of opponent. But I mean, having said that, I mean, the Jets they've won one solitary round since 2018. So, eventually you're going to be wondering if you have the right pieces. But to me, it's not about the mix. I mean, if I told you 2 years ago, Julian, that the Jets were going to be a candidate to be in the Jennings race in terms of goals allowed based on how loose they were defensively, I think you would have laughed me out of the room. So I would say they've taken some significant strides no matter what happens this year. But having said that, I mean, there's a team that has legitimate aspirations of winning, three or four rounds. So if you get bounced in the first round, you're going to be having everything else under review. But for me, I don't see a whack of wholesale changes. Now, having said that, they got big decisions on the back end with both Brendan Dillon and Dylan DeMello as unrestricted free agents. I'm sure they'd love to have Sean Monahan stick around, but he's going to have interest from a lot of teams given his resurgence. So, I mean, the team could look a little bit differently for sure, but I don't see an overhaul under any circumstance. But, I mean, they're also, to some degree, they're going to be waiting to see what happens with Rutger McGroarty and the University of Michigan Wolverines here. He's a guy that has the potential to come out after this year if he doesn't decide to go back for his junior year. So they still have a good prospect pool, but a guy like Brad Lambert having a great year in the American Hockey League as well. So I think the core pieces will be staying mostly the same, but, I mean, they've got some big decisions on the horizon too, having said that.
Ken Weaves along with us. A look at the opposition for the Calgary Flames tonight. It's the Winnipeg Jets' third and final meeting between these two teams this season. Ken, I'd love to ask you about Rick Bowness and his job with this team this season. I guess looking back to what the start was for this group, and obviously as the season's progressed and now integrating these new pieces that you mentioned were so key in a Monahan and in a Toffoli, how have you seen Rick Bowness and how he's handled this season for the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, Rick's done a really fantastic job, and I mean, so is Scott O'Neill and the rest of the staff, right? I mean, you have a couple scenarios where, Rick was away from the team with his wife, Judy, having some medical attention done, and then Rick having to leave that last road trip for, what was called a minor procedure as well. So there's been a little bit of disruption, but, I mean, the cohesiveness and the ability to have a guy like Scott O'Neill, who's a legitimate NHL coach on your staff as an associate, has really helped them do a great job. And I mean, to Julian's question too, I mean, Rick Bowness was on a 2-year deal plus a team option. So could a first round exit mean that Rick may not be back? I'm not certain. I mean, I'm not certainly not starting that, but I mean, you have to at least acknowledge the possibility. And again, Rick's 69 years old and been around the game forever. So we'll have to see how that goes. I mean, that would be the other thing that could be a factor in the off season here too. And does that mean that naturally Scott O'Neill would just take over, or would there be a wider search? I mean, like, that could be part of the equation as well. But, in terms of the job Rick has done, like I said, the commitment to this is a team that has struggled outside of 2018, and even then it was a challenge at times under Paul Maurice. The ability to commit to team defense is something that they've always wanted to do, but never quite got over the hump on that front. And Rick deserves an incredible amount of credit for his ability to get them to buy in on that front. Now, they need to do it down the stretch here, these last seven games, and then do it in the playoffs, or else otherwise, long off season potentially awaits. But he's done a great job in the role that he's done, and he's certainly refreshing guys in terms of how he deals with us. I mean, sometimes that can be a little bit much for the modern player at times, but I certainly haven't had as many podium moments about Game 5 this year. But certainly the truth serum has been flowing at times this year, and I mean, that's always a factor and a consideration as well. But yeah, Rick has done a great job, especially for a guy who looked like he was headed towards his retirement line before he was hired here.
How has Cole Perfetti been for the Winnipeg Jets? Looks like he's knocking on the door of 20 goals.
Yeah, Julian, it's such an interesting year. His first half, outstanding, played on a line mostly with Nikolaj Ehlers and Vladislav Namestnikov, and then went, I think, 22 or something around. He had one assist in 22 games recently, so that kind of got him between both healthy scratch duty and fourth line duty and in and out of the lineup, and then all of a sudden the opportunity comes to play on the second line, and he has just a great game the other night. So anytime a guy that you know, his age is able to knock on the door for 20, it's an incredible season. But he had a ton of points in the first 35-40 games, and then really quieted his game, really quieted in the second half here. But he sort of had a little bit of, obviously, a resurgence the other night, and now it's up to Cole to show that he can be a legitimate top six option in the playoffs. I mean, that's basically, they brought in Tyler Toffoli because Cole wasn't getting the job done in that role. So, I mean, they still long term, they think really highly of him, but certainly been some hiccups here for a guy who had, you know, two premature season ending injuries in the previous 2 years. But, you know, putting down a really good body of work in terms of laying the groundwork for future top six solid play. But he certainly had his, and he's been really open about it, Julian, and talking about it, which I really appreciate about him. Really thoughtful guy. And, you know, this is a guy who first round top 10 draft pick, you know, dominated every level up to this level. Really, you know, has had to look inwardly and really battle through some, you know, I wouldn't say crisis of confidence, but I would certainly say your mental fortitude gets tested when you go through what he's had to go through. And, you know, now it's about him trying to show Rick Bowness and the coaching staff that he deserves to be an everyday player come game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Ken, last one for you before we let you go here. Seven games left for Winnipeg on the schedule, including tonight against Calgary. What's left for this Jets team to try to accomplish before the season's out? Obviously, staying healthy is a big one, but is there some line combinations for Rick Bowness to explore? Is it just finding their game and trying to peak at the right time? How do you see these last seven for Winnipeg?
Yeah, they got a couple great tests coming up. They're playing both Dallas and Colorado on this upcoming road trip of two potential opponents if they want to try to get out of the Central Division, guys, right? So, and they're also, too, they're looking for their optimal configuration of the top six. Right now they got Nikolaj Ehlers back up with Mark Scheifele and Gabriel Vilardi, who's been great in his games back after dealing with that enlarged spleen and the upper body injury, which means Kyle Connor is with Sean Monahan, and right now it's Cole Perfetti, but we expect Tyler Toffoli to be back in that job. So it's an interesting time. They got to basically tighten things up defensively and kind of get ramping up for playoff time. But yeah, they got some tough matchups on the horizon, but they're trying to put themselves in as best position as they can in that race for second in the Central, because as we talked about with MacKinnon early, you'd rather have the opportunity to have the choice of having Adam Lowry out there rather than having Jared Bednar throwing him over the boards against whoever he wants in four of those seven games.
Ken, really great insight as always. Really appreciate you taking some time for us on a game day. Enjoy tonight. Enjoy the postseason run for Winnipeg. You know, we'll check in with you soon.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Always great to be with you guys, and enjoy the rest of the way here to you, and enjoy the tilt tonight. Should be a fun one.
I was looking forward to it. Thanks again, Kenny. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Cheers, guys.
Take care. Ken Weeb joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, Sportsnet writer, and, of course, covering the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. A great look at the opposition with Ken heading into this game against Winnipeg. And interesting group, Julian. They are in a weird spot right now. It sure looks like Colorado in round one, at least right now for Winnipeg. And like Ken said, if you lose out to Colorado, do you feel all that bad? No, but you spent assets for this year. You made a big push to re-sign players. Like, it's a tough spot for Winnipeg right now.
Yeah, and you had that great start to the year, which, hey, maybe you wouldn't have put yourself in a position to go up against Colorado if things went a little better, right? So, I mean, I don't think a Colorado-Winnipeg series would result in a waste of 8 days, as someone once said, but I think the Jets would definitely be in tough. I get it. Goaltending can get you through, but a player like Nathan MacKinnon and the offensive talent that Colorado has, that could prove to be a pretty big problem for Winnipeg if they're not playing at their top level and the depth doesn't come through for them.
Appreciate you, Jim.
I said that a little fast. Yeah, no, I good. Appreciate you too.
Enjoy the game tonight, my man. We'll check in again next week. You can find Julian on Twitter, of course, at The Athletic, covering the Calgary Flames on a regular basis. We'll be in, of course, the house for the Battle of Alberta on Saturday and more. But we're getting out of here on a Thursday edition of the program. Thanks to Simon on the board. Cam and Azam, my outstanding producers. And thanks to Adnan Virk and Ken Weave for joining us today. If you missed anything, check us out on the podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. No Sportsnet today. Tomorrow, we're taking the Jays game against the Yankees. So we will check in with you on a Monday edition of the program. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. For Julian McKenzie, I'm Logan Gordon. This has been Sportsnet today on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Peace.